Hey, it's Bill Radke. You know, if you heard our Week in Review this week on the radio, then you heard us talk about KUOW's pledge drive and how important your support is. But for you, right now, the podcast listener, we're bringing you the show without the pledge drive stuff. So enjoy the Week in Review with no interruption, but realize how vital your support is. We can do the Week in Review because you support KUOW financially. Right now, just go to KUOW.org, and thank you. Like I said, welcome to Friday. Welcome to KUOW. We're going to figure out what happened this week, and I have friends with me to do it. Monica Guzman is co-founder of the Evergrey newsletter, Live Like You Live Here.
Yep, that's the motto.
That's the motto.
That's how we do it.
Charles Medede, film editor at The Stranger. Welcome back.
Thank you for having me back again.
Rachel Lerman, tech reporter at the Seattle Times. Welcome.
Thank you so much for having me.
Good to have you here. Let's talk about this week gone by. Howard Schultz announced he'll retire from Starbucks in 2 weeks. And Schultz has been so vocal about political issues, racism, trade, the national debt, gun control, that everybody wanted to know, are you leaving Starbucks to run for president?
There's a lot of things I can do as a private citizen other than run for the presidency of the United States. And let's just see what happens. I've got lots of things that I'm thinking about. I'm writing a book. It's only been 24 hours. But we've talked many times about how concerned I am about the country, our standing in the world. And I think there's many things I can do as a private citizen to advance the cause of the promise of the country.
That was Schultz on CNBC, not saying whether he's running for president, and yet so many people are weighing in on the idea of him running for president. The rich liberal activist Nick Hanauer said Howard Schultz is a straight-up trickle-downer, a terrible idea for president, and on and on. I'm curious your reaction to his leaving Starbucks, his not saying whether he's a candidate.
He's not saying he's not a candidate.
Yeah.
And I think traditionally that's what you do, right, when you're not really ready to announce. So definitely leaves the door open. What I'm most fascinated by is the reaction of Seattle sports community. And
oh, yes.
Remembering what Schultz may or may not have done when it comes to the Sonics.
Yes. For those who don't know, right, Schultz sold the team in, what, 20 a few years ago.
It was the
mid-1800s. I know that, but I don't know exactly the year.
It's been a while for the NBA.
And then a couple of years later, the group that he sold, and when he sold it, it was to someone who hadn't he said, I'm a proud Oklahoman.
Uh-huh.
And a lot of people feared that they would leave, and guess what? A couple years later,
they were gone. And I remember reporting at that time and just really feeling the loathing from some corners of the city, even talking about boycotting Starbucks and whatnot. So this week you saw all of that get revived, and to the point where I'm wondering, you know, if you're a real dedicated Seattle sports fan, would you allow yourself to let go of this grudge, even if Howard Schultz ended up at the top of the Democratic ticket?
Yeah, I don't know. Look, here's my thing. First of all, the basketball thing is gonna be forgotten eventually. That's a Seattle gripe. And, you know, I mean, maybe it's instructive in the sense that, you know, we know he will, like, he can sell you down the river, you know, in the political future.
Uh-huh.
That's maybe what we do know is that, you know, ultimately money matters to him. And it was about selling the team and making a profit. And that's what he does very well. But to be honest with you, if anybody listened to that NBC interview, the guy sounds like not just like hinting at running for president. I mean, he sounds like he is running for president.
Mm.
He's very serious. And I think that a lot of people are not really, you know, there's a lot of issues that he's interested in, true, gun control, you know, and immigration are another subject and so forth and so on. And he has different opinions about that, you know, in relationship to Trump and so forth and so on. But the key thing, I think the fire in him is the issue on America's standing. If you listen to that interview, he repeats it over and over and over again.
What does he say about America's standing?
Well, he's worried about the global perspective of the United States of America. Here's a guy with a company that's absolutely, right, at the center of the globalization process, right?
He's adding two stores in China
which he says in two stores every, what, 10 minutes?
Something like that.
Something ridiculous. Every latte made is in a new shop opening in China or something like that. But if you listen to him, he's like, clearly this is what's disturbing him. And I think he's speaking for a lot of CEOs in the United States who run multinational corporations who are kind of freaked by this new gesture, this new positioning by the current president, right? And I think that if anything else, this is the real motivation for him, is to restore America's older program, older globalization project. Right.
Well, mm-hmm. We might talk more about that as a presidential campaign issue. Rachel, what was your reaction?
I'm not totally convinced that Schultz is going to run for president, and I agree that basketball isn't going to matter outside of Seattle. But
Trump won Oklahoma in 2016, and Schultz could flip that to the Democrats.
Maybe he
There's
could.
Always
possibly he could, but I'm not convinced the country is ready for is going to be ready for another CEO president.
I wonder. Yeah, are
well,
we kind of hooked
a,
on
no,
that?
No, no,
at
no.
This
you
point?
Guys made a mistake. Trump was not a CEO. He made that very clear. Trump was just a standard businessman running scams. He is a CEO with responsibilities to shareholders. That's another ball game. You know,
it would be fascinating to see Howard Schultz versus Donald Trump on sort of business success. I mean, for Trump to sort of try to, you know, keep the lead on that would be at least very fun.
But
that's
I think
interesting.
We're going to hit a point of fatigue with elections, with dealing with business. I think people are going to get sick of hearing about just business when we're coming to political elections.
Mm. Well, maybe coffee. We love coffee.
Ooh.
Yeah, we do. Americans love coffee. On the other hand, latte liberal. That's going to hang on him, you know?
Yeah.
There's a local sports radio host, Mike Gastineau, who tweeted, if Howard Schultz gets elected president, who will he ultimately sell America to when things get tough?
Yeah,
like he would sell us to some, he would sell America to someone who would move us to Russia.
Uh-huh, and then he'd say, he didn't know. Yeah. They told him they wouldn't.
Well, that was Danny Westney in the Seattle Times. That was Danny Westney's take was, you know, he did say that he claimed not to know that this owner, Clay Bennett, was going to move the team to Oklahoma when many people were saying that's exactly what was going to happen. So, yeah, I mean, the Seattle, the basketball grudge is a local thing, but I don't know. Do you think that would actually become national talk about, oh, are you really the art of the deal, Howard? Or do you think anyone nationally cares?
I don't think anyone nationally cares. Okay. I think this is also something, to be honest, I don't care that much about sports, and this is something that I only ever hear about very rarely when Howard Schultz makes huge national news.
Mm-hmm.
Then the people in Seattle flare up, but I don't think the rest of the country
That's true.
Cares.
I will say presidential campaigns can be real moments of surrealness, and any little thing can become any big thing and nobody sees it coming.
Yeah, but there's also something else about him which is really puzzling to me. I mean, again, what he's sort of like, his program, which is really bizarre. It doesn't really make sense. Everybody, I mean, he sounds like a very rational person, and he's a very slow, considerate speaker, right? Chooses his words carefully. But if you compose what he's putting together, you realize it's a kind of nutty world. Like, he's saying in one hand, he's like against entitlements. Like, he's saying, like, entitlements are a problem because, we'll have to deal with them because the debt is growing
up. Yeah, he's very down on the debt.
Yeah, he's very down on the debt. But at the same time, he's, like, talking about tax cuts being, like, you know, bad and they're hurting the economy.
He said corporate America doesn't need tax cuts.
Yeah. I mean, this is not consistent. I mean, what exactly are we going to do? Are we going to increase taxes and then cut entitlements? I mean, how are you really, and this is the most bizarre thing, everybody. I'm sorry. He says, of course, this is the craziest thing, and think about it. He says he wants to grow the economy at 4%. You know, 4%. That's some, like, developing world kind of stuff, right? Mm. And 4% means, I mean, how do you make sense of that from a guy who's supposed to be eco-friendly? 4% growth is rapid, huge growth for an economy of this size. Trees are going down fast with that kind of growth.
What about the issue Schultz is most famously attached to now, which is the racial bias education at Starbucks, shutting down stores, the Race Together campaign, barista? Like, how do you compare, if you were to run against Donald Trump, who was not popularly elected, but Electoral College elected, I mean, how would that break down?
You would think that lots of people on the left who believe that, you know, racism is a really big issue right now, you would think that on the whole, they would have looked sort of nicely on the fact that the CEO of Starbucks actually closed 8,000 stores and had everyone do racial training in the afternoon. Things like that. This is a company that takes those issues very seriously. So you'd think with that base, at least, you know, that would get their attention in a favorable way? What do y'all think?
You know, ultimately, Schultz represents, you know, he's a globalist. Just know that straight off the bat. I mean, he wants to sell coffee to anybody who can drink. If a cow can drink coffee, he will want to sell it to cows. Whatever it is.
It's not a bad idea. It's not very efficient.
I'm just saying, I'm just saying that his sense is like he doesn't want racism. He wants everybody to participate in the right to drink, or, you know, the right to buy stuff. And so I'm just saying that, you know, that's what globalism and a lot of people in the, you know, in the flyover area, that's what they're opposed to, is this kind of cosmopolitanism, right? It's a sort of corporate cosmopolitanism, and that's what really.
I think it's going to come down to action. Like, Schultz can do all these things. He can shut the stores. He can put on these trainings. He can talk about it a lot, which he does. And I think that that's a good start. But I think it's going to come down to action and outcomes. What are we actually going to see out of the closure of the stores last week?
Let's pause it there, because we've other stories, other events this week to discuss on The Week in Review. With my guests, you've been listening to Rachel Lerman, Seattle Times, Charles Mundady at The Stranger, Monica Guzman from The Evergrey. And we'll be right back. It's The Week in Review. I'm Bill Radke. This week, a big Bellevue gaming company announced it will host any game on its online store, even games some people find offensive. The company, Valve, was criticized last week because you could use their site to buy a game that depicted a school shooting. Announcing their new policy, the company said their store, quote, is going to contain something that you hate and don't think should exist, but you're also going to see something on the store that you believe should be there, and some other people will hate it and want it not to exist. They go on to say, the games we allow onto the store will not be a reflection of Valve's values beyond a simple belief that you all have the right to create and consume the content you choose. That's their message to developers. You developers have the right to create and consume the content you choose. Seattle Times tech reporter Rachel Lerman, good move?
I think the reaction to this has been very interesting. What I've been seeing from gamers is they're kind of disappointed in Valve. They're saying, oh, hey, you're acknowledging that this is a really hard problem to decide where to draw the line, and you're deciding not to decide. You're leaving it up to other people, and you're just kind of saying, oh, hands off, there you go. So the reaction has been pretty heavily swayed that way. There are some people who are saying, oh yeah, this is good, this is creative content, we should be able to say what we want, this should be an open free market. And others are saying, no, you know, you made this technology, you need to take some responsibility for it. So I think the reaction there has been interesting. I also think that Valve left the door open a little bit to still take down content.
Yes.
They said that they won't allow content that's illegal or trolling, but they did not define trolling. And in a follow-up, they did say that no matter what, the active shooter game that depicted a school shooting is not going back on the site.
Yes, you're right. They did leave it open because they said that we had an email back and forth with them, KUOW did, and the company said that they rejected active shooter because it was a troll, is their quote, designed to do nothing but generate outrage and cause conflict through its existence. So, yes, the company still gets to judge when they think a game is designed to do nothing but be outrageous.
Mm-hmm. There was something really striking to me about the conclusion of this, because first came the outrage over the active shooter game and people going, what's Valve going to do? And I sort of thought, Valve's probably going to do with what a lot of online platforms have been doing in the last couple of years, which is actually make structural changes that they announce publicly. Facebook, for example, right? Famous for, hey, we're not responsible. We're not responsible for what gets on our platform because we can't be, because liability and all that stuff. Now we know that things have gotten crazy enough that Facebook is taking responsibility and accountability for some things. So when I saw this answer from Valve, oh, by the way, we're actually not going to change that much, I thought, whoa,
yeah.
That's still possible in this climate. Kind of amazing. And I think that it also speaks to Valve's very community-centric approach. As far as tech companies go, they've been very much about their community taking the reins and driving things for a long time.
As in gaming? The gaming community.
Yeah. Players, game creators. That's, you know, among the characteristics that have made their game so popular is like gaming economies and gaming platforms and all these gamers really feeling like, wow, they're letting us drive the ship here. So I saw that strain coming through this.
And I think it follows how Valve positions itself generally, which is it's a very agnostic platform. People are able to do what they want to do, which is some of the power of the internet and some of the power that they're handing to creators.
Yeah, it's like it seems like that's it sounds like you're telling me that's the gamer culture, is that libertarian agnosticism, whereas Facebook, which is an online company, is dealing with not an online culture, but they've gone so broad that they're dealing with a lot of people who want them to be opinionated and culture gatekeepers.
Yeah, well, we'll see how long. We'll see. I mean, their language right now is being very sort of like, as you pointed out to me, is very much like playing it safe, at the same time saying what gamers and what the whole culture wants to hear, which is we're free to do what we want to do, because they don't want to lose that business or that air. But, I mean, eventually they'll be challenged again, and then we'll see from that action what really the policy of their model is and what the policy is. Right now, they've only been challenged once.
Yes.
But, you know, let's say if you had a game that involved lynching black people and so forth and so on, let's see where you stand on that. And then we'll start to see, okay, there's a, you know what I mean?
Like, yes, we're going to get to decide case by case what they judge to be trolling and purely outrageous.
That's where it stands right now. And that's why they left it.
Yeah.
And here's what's kind of crazy is, if I were a troll, and I am not, but if I were a troll, I'd be like, ooh, open season on Valve.
Right.
I should
Let's
just
test
go ahead
it.
Yeah. And make some other crazy game and get myself in the headlines.
Yeah, true. Speaking of online companies, Google this week said it's no longer taking political ads in Washington state. Our state attorney general is suing Google and Facebook for allegedly violating our transparency laws, which are fairly advanced in Washington, when it comes to political advertising. So as of now, if you want to buy an ad for a local election or a Washington state ballot measure, Google will say no, and that's a big deal because Google ads show up on a lot of websites, including YouTube, which they own. Rachel, do you think this Google ad blackout is serious and permanent?
I don't think it's permanent. I think what Google is saying is, okay, we're getting sued. Okay, there's this new law in the state that has increased transparency laws, and we need time to step back and figure out how we're going to keep up with that. I think Washington state, while not one of the most tumultuously political states in the nation, is still very important politically, and they're going to want the money from those ads dollars. So I think that this is sort of a temporary step while they figure out how they can keep and disclose this information.
Does anyone think this Google ad blackout would swing a local election because of who doesn't get to buy an ad?
Ooh,
a Google ad?
Fascinating. I mean, I guess we'd have to know. Does anyone know how much money is usually spent via Google on local elections?
Don't have that information.
I don't either. That'd be fascinating.
I know Eli Sanders at my newspaper.
Yes.
Eli.
I know.
He's good work on this.
Yeah,
for those who don't know, will you tell them what the strangers Eli Sanders did?
Walked
into their office.
They walked into their office and tried to figure out, it was Facebook.
Yes.
And tried to figure out what the records was for spending, for political spending and their advertising. And there was some resistance to releasing that information with good reason. And, you know,
what do you mean with good reason?
Do you know, I always think that in a way, let's go back to Obama. And I think that he did a really good job of what the internet was what could do at that time. And he exploited it. And I think a big part of his success was his understanding of the technology at that stage. I actually think that a big reason that Hillary collapsed or failed is because they didn't understand the nature of the system had changed at that time. And what was happening with Facebook was completely different from what it was doing 4 years ago, eight years behind.
Mm-hmm.
And so to me, we're sort of catching up now to this new regime of the technology. And we need to, and so this is what I think that the Google and Facebook and what Eli's been doing is been trying to bring this to, you know what I mean, to articulate this transformation so that we know how to respond to it politically. But we, in a sense, I must admit, I mean, Trump's team were much ahead, or was further ahead in understanding what was going on than Hillary's.
And it comes at a really sensitive time, right, for advertising on platforms like Google and Facebook. I mean, Facebook just had this huge blow up with Cambridge Analytica, where suddenly people realized their information was being used to influence political elections. So I think it's I think the companies are seeing it as a point of caution. They're taking a little step back.
Google says this is a temporary move. It's not about the new lawsuit. It's about this new Washington state law, which is about campaign finance reporting requirements. So this law just kicked in, having to do with digital ad companies needing to keep information that you can find publicly available about ads, the way TV and radio and newspapers.
I will say it's felt for a long time, not so much that tech companies are above the law, but that they're smarter and quicker than the law. Mm-hmm. And it's like, oh, it took this long, but now a Washington state law can actually bring down a piece of Google's business temporarily, because not because it's a new law, but because we newly are aware that they have not been following existing laws. And I think the perception of a lot of our tech giants is they're so cool, they're so amazing, they're so global, nothing can stop them. And it's like, no, they've probably been cutting corners, and the rest of us just don't have bajillions of dollars the way they do to try to, you know, maximize our, you know, accountability and protections of them. So the fact that Eli and others have been, you know, marching right up to the office with a piece of paper, doing those sort of antiquated old things to make sure that a big entity is held accountable is pretty awesome.
More intelligent than the law. Can we invent a computer so intelligent that it could pardon itself?
Oh, I mean, that's existential
questions. You were saying, Rachel?
I also think that Washington state lawmakers have largely demonstrated that they know what's going on within these tech companies, which runs a little bit counter to the hearings that we saw on the national level with Facebook, with the, you know,
members of Congress
emails and things like that.
Yes. Rachel Lerman is tech reporter at the Seattle Times. She knows a lot more than Congress does about that topic. Charles Mundetti, film editor at The Stranger. Monica Guzman, co-founder of the Evergrey newsletter. Motto, live like you live here. We're going to be right back. There's more to come on The Week in Review, including Miss America and Oprah. Stay tuned. Here figuring out the week with you on The Week in Review is The Stranger's Charles Mundetti, The Evergreys Monica Guzman, and The Seattle Times' Rachel Lerman. I'm Bill Radke. Miss America is not a pageant. It's a competition. The Miss America board chair, Gretchen Carlson, told Good Morning America this week, "We will no longer judge you on your outward appearance because we're interested in what makes you, you."
You know, we've heard from a lot of young women who say, "We'd love to be a part of your program, but we don't want to be out there in high heels and a swimsuit." So guess what? You don't have to do that anymore.
I asked a former Miss Washington about this. Brittany Henry of Puyallup was Miss Washington in 2011, and she told me the swimsuit competition is misunderstood.
People have this idea that there is a judge of misogynistic white men sitting there as these young women come out in string bikinis, getting judged on how sexy or how pretty they are. And from my perspective as a contestant, that was never, ever, ever how it was. This portion of competition made me feel incredibly empowered and was all about my personal health and fitness journey.
Miss Washington felt empowered. What was your reaction to the news?
Really? Is what I want to say to what I just heard.
Say more.
I mean, it's just about my health and fitness, but I have to wear a string bikini to show off my health and fitness? Uh-huh. Sure. To use an incredibly awkward metaphor considering the context, you put lipstick on a pig. Still a pig. What I'm wondering is, all right, you can redefine this brand however you'd like, and you can say what it's really about, what it's always really been about. And sure, part of it has been about who the women are, of course.
Scholarship and good work.
Sure, but come on. Like, who buys the argument that it's not by far about looks, and it's always been by far about looks?
And it's going to continue to be about looks, right? Like, I'm glad that she feels empowered. I really am. And I think even without the swimsuit competition, Miss America is still largely going to be people watching to see beautiful people.
There are rules that, by the way, you have to be a female, born female. These are Miss America rules. Single, by the way, never married, never
Really?
Yes. Yeah, never pregnant or a parent. Yeah. And you have to be between 17 and 25.
Never pregnant or a parent?
Why do you need to be single to get a scholarship?
Oh, this is, come on.
Well, so many questions. I used to feel like I understood Miss America. I was never a fan, but I felt like I got what it was. But why are they? Why are they young? Why are they single? Why are they women? Why is there a talent competition? We could go on.
Yeah. Well, first of all, of course, that's the age for, you choose who you want to marry. That's what that's referring to. I mean, it's just, you know what I mean?
They're maidens.
They're maidens, essentially. That's what they are. But, first of all, I think that this system can be recouped because it can be salvaged if we had, like, beavers as judges and not humans.
Wait, what? Back up.
If we had another animal, like another species, I think in that sense it would be like, okay, right? Because we understand that the beavers or whatever it is, be it bears, would be like, looking at something, maybe they'll be interested in
humans. I see what
you're saying.
All right.
Yeah, how would a bear judge us? That's what I want to know.
I think at that point I'd be relieved. I'd say, okay, this is a fair competition.
Uh-huh.
Right? The bears have these ideas about humans and, you know what I mean? And they're trying to figure it out.
This took a turn.
No, the whole thing is ridiculous. The fact is, from the bottom up, it's ridiculous. Nothing can be salvaged about this. It's an antiquated thing. Nothing
could
be recouped.
But could she be gradually turning the ship? So maybe it becomes about all the one by one things fall away and they try to maintain some kind of interest. I don't know what that Miss America thing would look like.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know.
Maybe it's a spelling bee.
It's a
scholarship competition. It's people on stage demonstrating why they deserve it.
Why are they on stage? You could just email in your resume that you did good things.
Just wear a Fitbit, walk around for a while, it's about health and fitness.
You have to go back to the beavers, I'm telling you. When you listen, the way you guys are talking about it, that's the only way it can be recouped. I have a daughter, and I'd be absolutely distressed if she told me that she's going to walk around the stage trying to show that she is being empowered by her appearance, right? With the idea that somehow, at the end of the day, she has some talent behind all of that. And so I'm like, come on, give me a break.
But if a bear is chasing her.
Yeah, right. Now, if a bear was doing the judging, I would say, okay, my daughter.
What do you think the bear's criteria?
Make sure, don't run when they come after you. I heard that's what you do in a forest.
When you're on stage, you have to look big. You have to scream at the judges and wave something above your head.
Right, yeah.
Oh, man.
Wow.
No, nothing can be recovered. I swear to God, nothing at all about the pageants or whatever they call
them. Well, what is it worth... Is there a worthy turn toward judging one another on looks less and less? Or do you think that that's even possible?
I think it is worthy, just despite my sort of, ha kind of comment at the beginning of this discussion. I mean, yeah, if Miss America really can somehow keep the name and the brand and the legacy and transform into something that is more about character, then sure. I mean, go for it. That's great. I think a lot of people would support that. It's still kind of hard to believe that they're really fully committed to that yet.
I think a lot of it's going to come down to perception, right? And I always go back to Miss Congeniality and the people yelling on stage, it is not a beauty pageant. Uh-huh. It's a scholarship competition.
Hey, it is not a beauty pageant. It is a scholarship program.
Yeah.
Yeah, Rachel.
If they don't believe it, we won't believe it. So hopefully they do.
Yeah. I mean, I took looks into account when I was dating. Thought my wife was lovely.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what it means for society. I don't know what society.
Why are we judging people at all?
Yes.
Let's also have Mr. America. But like that is just
Mr. America is a bodybuilding.
Let's have. Yeah. I mean, it would feel less objectifying if it wasn't just young women. Right.
I think you want to go about looks, and there is that competition. Arnold Schwarzenegger was a Mr. Universe,
but that's a different thing. No. I do understand. That's about muscles and weightlifting. That's another thing altogether. It's not about the idea of like I actually believe the Miss Universe or whatever, Miss America, whatever that is stuff, is really about utility. In a sense, like it's about finding a useful model for for what you want to marry, what you know what I mean, that sort of thing. In that way, it's pernicious. right? And the fact that, you know, we have to subject all these, you know, the entire culture to a standard of beauty we should be beyond that. We really have to let it go. There's nothing that, now if women are going to go and build muscles and saying, how many muscles can we, you know, can we pack in a female body? That's another thing to be altogether.
I guess to your point, Bill, you know, I don't see all of a sudden all of us in society suddenly actually not caring about beauty.
Well, I'm curious what happens to the ratings. If maybe Gretchen Carlson hated being Miss America and her plot is to just make this thing slowly go away, but she's doing it gradually. Hmm. Maybe we'll make them stand for the Pledge of Allegiance during that. I don't know anymore. I don't know what this thing is, and I don't know whether more people will watch it or fewer, but we'll see. This is The Week in Review. We're wrapping up. Right after the show, I'm going to Orcas Island for the weekend, where I'll probably run into Oprah Winfrey. I mean, truly, I'm going to Orcas Island because it's a YMCA camp, but Oprah just bought a 43-acre estate on Orcas Island, and how could she not after she viewed this video from Sotheby's International Realty?
There are few places quite like the San Juan Islands in the Pacific Northwest. And here, gently placed along the east sound of Orcas Island.
How I would love to have a gently placed house, because my house was rammed into its current location, leaving giant cracks in the foundation. But this this estate was gently placed.
Welcome to Madronigal, a matchless land.
By the way, that's the name
that's
of this.
That's how you pronounce it?
Madronigal.
Madronigal?
It looks like Madrone Eagle. Yeah, yeah.
Welcome to Madronigal.
Oh my God. Why?
A matchless land portfolio and residential sanctuary. More than half a mile of west-facing shoreline. Dramatic topography, from the private beaches to rugged cliffside beauty. Above all, a personal retreat of peerless stature.
I think the peerless stature sealed the deal, because what I don't like about my stature is it's peered.
Yeah.
They suck. But Oprah's peerless.
A substantial barn and workshop beckons craftsmen and mechanics.
You thought a barn beckoned cow poop, but a barn, in this case, beckons mechanics. By the way, be careful about things that beckon mechanics. I had a Pontiac Le Mans that beckoned mechanics, and I regretted that purchase.
A lower-level fitness center overlooks a cliffside veranda for open-air yoga.
I only do open-air yoga because I don't have a lower-level fitness center. For me, it's one or the other. So it goes on and on and on. There is a meandering brook, quote-unquote, and it has a water wheel that they show, which, again, I think it's one or the other. Either the brook is just meandering or it is totally focused on getting to the water wheel. But either way, Oprah has come to Orcas Island.
I'm glad billionaires are not safe from bad writing. I mean, I'm relieved to find that they're hit by the same trash as everybody else.
That was writing of peerless stature.
Peerless stature.
Peerless.
Apparently, TMZ learned that Oprah didn't even visit the property when she bought it.
Wow.
Which is, wow.
She saw that video. That's why she didn't have to visit it.
It's effective. Must be effective. And that music was soothing.
I kind of want that to be my life.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't even have to visit something. I just want it, and so I get it.
And it's mine.
Yeah. Well, I mean, come on. If she actually visited the place, we'd be disappointed.
You think?
Because it means she actually really felt it.
Mm.
You know what I mean? She went there, and she saw the water, and then she was moved deeply. Mm-hmm. And then she said, I want to be here. And that sounds like, that sounds like not so interesting as over my cell phone. $8 million.
Get it.
Whatever it is.
Well, why do you think she'd be disappointed?
I'm just more cynical. I just think that it's just cooler that she hasn't seen it yet.
Yeah.
And she may never see it in her whole life.
Yeah.
And,
she'll never lose the ideal of it. She'll never have to fix that water wheel. It's never going to break down.
No, right.
You have to call someone on Orcas Island who fixes water wheels?
It's very Borgesian in that sense. You know, he has that poem where the king, like, has a poem written about his kingdom. Mm. And that's enough for him. And that's enough for our billionaire class. Just write it, and they can revisit it and read it and feel melancholy. Mm. It's good stuff.
Mm. You know what we journalists have to do? Mm. We have to figure out what is Oprah's ferry boat and what is her plane? And we have to watch
You think she's on the? She thinks she's on the 345 from Anacortes?
I don't think she will be.
I don't think.
But we gotta do the sightings of Oprah's boat.
It's interesting that you know, Seattle. I mean, the concentration of billionaires in this region is sort of interesting. I mean, what does that mean? I mean, in a serious sense, I mean, what is it telling us? Why the attraction here? Mm. What does it mean? And we already have all these other players. We have one running for president now, who ran Starbucks and
might be hasn't ruled it out.
Oh no. that door is not even open. It's blown off.
Wow.
He's going for president. Wow. And he's going to do it. And, you know, Seattle's trying to flex its muscle. Yes. And maybe we're seeing now a gathering of the billionaire class in a place which they feel is a platform for this kind of, you know, vision.
Another Washingtonian who doesn't want a capital gains tax.
Right. Yeah, that's another one.
We don't have a Trump Tower yet.
Mm.
Yeah.
Okay, Oprah, I'll see you this weekend. I'll see you at the Island Hardware Store. I'll see you at the Clever Cow Creamery and the Crow Valley Pottery. Hanging with Oprah. She's going to be disappointed at the weather this weekend, by the way. I don't know what she was thinking it was going to be like in June. Rainy.
Good luck, Orca Island.
Good luck, Orcas. That's our show for today. We're done. I want to thank my guests, Charles Medady, film editor at The Stranger, and Rachel Lerman, tech reporter of The Seattle Times, Monica Guzman, co-founder of the Evergrey newsletter. Thanks a lot, team.
Thank you.
Good times.
And by the way, there's more Week in Review. We're coming live to Bellevue on June 21st. We're going to do the show at the Bellevue Art Museum, and it's a Thursday night, June 21st. Tickets are free. Why do they even call them tickets? Just come in. You can find out, I guess they're free. I guess they're tickets, but they're free. And you can find out more at KOW.org. We're going to be back on Monday with Week in Review. Seattle writer Angela Garbez and her mom are on the show on Monday. Angela's new book is Like a Mother, A Feminist Journey Through the Science and Culture of Pregnancy. So join us then and have a great weekend.
Isn't
that a good Week in Review?
Yeah.
It's always good.